at The Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
Live from Montreal, it's time for Blue Jays spring training baseball for the final time.
It's at The Letters for Saturday, April 1st in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, it's a Saturday. It's Saturday night. We're podcasting. We're overlooking the city. Life doesn't get better than this, my friend.
It's definitely our first Saturday night podcast. Our first weekend podcast, I think, of any kind.
Generally a better use for the time on the weekend.
Yeah. And our first podcast in Montreal. So big developments here on ATL.
But you know what? It's important because we had to be here to see the Blue Jays wrap up the spring with two games against Pittsburgh Pirates. They tied one. They won the other. Doesn't really matter. Marcus Stroman started the Friday game. Looked really, really good. Francisco Liriano started the Saturday game. Looked really, really good. Look, we've gone to the end of this spring. It's been like 7 weeks and change. John Gibbons said today it feels like it's August. I tend to agree with him. But you know what? Nobody got hurt. And that is the most important thing, I would say, to take out of this spring.
Yeah, exactly. It's certainly not the record. And I checked, actually, the spring training standings for the first time.
Did you check if it's August? No. It feels like August. It is, go ahead. Sorry.
It is April 1st, in fact. The standings said that the Toronto Blue Jays had the worst record of all American League teams in spring training. And yet, that doesn't matter at all.
Who cares?
It really doesn't matter at all. I think that for this team, the most important thing was to emerge from spring training relatively healthy. And they've done that. Now we're looking at a team that has pretty healthy lineup, reasonably healthy bullpen, and a rotation 1-5 that looks really good.
You look at how long they've been doing baseball things for. I think it was Valentine's Day when pitchers and catchers reported. I mean, it's a long time, a lot of exposure to risk, potential injury. But who's hurt right now? Glenn Sparkman, Dalton Pompey. That's really it.
Yeah, you've got that one question of Aaron Sanchez and the blister.
Right.
And that's the one lingering doubt surrounding this team, and they say that they're not worried about that blister. When you're talking about someone who is as important to this team's chances of success as Aaron Sanchez, then you want to make sure that he's 100% okay. Of course, he's very important to this team, but they sound optimistic. So at this point, you have to assume that he is going to be out there on that fifth game of the season to basically defend that ERA title that he won last year.
Yeah, you know, and you know what I should mention before we go on? We're going to have guests later on in this podcast. We're going to be joined by Jonah Carey. We're going to be joined by Eric Gagne, Cy Young winner. First Cy Young winner on the podcast, I believe, that I can remember.
Yeah, I think so. I think we'd remember.
Right? Seems like something that would stick out in your memory.
Yeah.
Both of those guys, we actually talked to them earlier today at the ballpark. We're recording this part later in the day, but we will talk to them later in the podcast about a whole variety of things. Some cool chats with those guys, so stay tuned for that. But you know, right now, I'm talking about the starting rotation. You look at Marco Straw and J-Hat, maybe had like a hiccup each this spring, but very quickly got over it. Marcus Stroman and Francisco Liriano have just been so locked in and lights out throughout. And then Aaron Sanchez, fifth guy who maybe we haven't seen that much of, but he led the American League in ERA last year. He's a pretty good pitcher.
Yeah.
I have very few concerns about this starting five.
The only possible concern that you could have about this group is who would follow.
Six, seven.
Yeah, exactly. And potentially 8, 9, 10. I mean, this is a group that was very healthy last year, and you don't have guarantees that they're going to be as healthy this year. So I think that that's where guys like Mike Bolsinger and Matt Latos come in. If you're the Blue Jays, you hope that you don't have to rely on those guys because your starting five is so good. So as of right now, we're looking at a healthy starting five. So that's great for the Blue Jays as long as that lasts.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen some very promising things from this group as well. You know, Marco Estrada's velocity has been up. Says he's feeling healthy. His back's feeling right. That's a good sign. Marcus Stroman has been like toying around with his delivery on the mound, hesitating. His two-seamer has looked great. He's pitched already in really high-pressure situations and scenarios and thrived in them. J-Habs looked like himself. Francisco Liriano's been like one of the better pitchers in baseball this spring. You know, you want to be cautious, but you know, you've got some starters who are going into the regular season on some serious roles.
Yeah, and I thought the guys that we saw this weekend in Montreal, Liriano and Stroman, were really good. And I mean, Stroman, he's a really fun pitcher to watch. And I almost forgot that because there was so much discussion last year. I mean, as recently as, what, 7-8 months ago, people were talking about possibly sending him down.
I remember that.
People it's not wanted that to, long ago.
Yeah, tweets every day, send Stroman to AAA, every day.
And this is a guy who, since then, finished the season very strong, pitched well in the playoffs, won the MVP at the WBC, and finished off a very strong spring. So I think that now, entering this season, he's got a blank slate, and it's going to be interesting to see what he can do, because he's someone who combines, you know, for all the various pitches that he throws, the sinker and the curveball, to me, are probably his best pitches, and they're both very good. And when you mix that up with the variance in deliveries, I just think it makes for a really interesting viewing experience to watch Stroman, because I like the quick pitches. I like the hesitation stuff, if you can pull it off, which it seems he can.
He already had one of the top ground ball rates in baseball, if not the top ground, but like it was around 60% last year. He's getting ground balls at a higher rate this spring so far, and he's and that was with last year a period where he couldn't locate his two-seamer, and that two-seamer is how he gets ground balls. So I mean, if he can even increase that this year, I know on our highly popular over-unders episode, I went out and predicted two complete games for Marcus Stroman this year. I can see it. He is efficient. He's working quickly. He's attacking the zone. I mean, he just looks like he's got such good feel for his pitches. He was telling us the other day, look, I'm going to have bad days in this, you know, in the season. If I make 32, 33 starts, there's going to be ones where I don't have my stuff and I'm going to have to get over those. But, you know, this is as confident as I've seen Marcus Stroman, which is saying something because he's inherently quite a confident kid.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really good spot for him to be in entering this season. And I think you can say the same about Liriano. The fact that he went out there and in 18 innings, I think he struck out 29 batters.
It's wild.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. That's so many strikeouts.
Like two an inning. That's crazy.
Yeah. So he's in a great position as well. And when you look at those guys, say at the beginning of August last year, they would have been afterthoughts compared to Sanchez and Estrada and Happ. And yet those two at this point are the guys who maybe there's the most excitement about.
Yeah, it's funny how things change, you know, and when you look at the bullpen, maybe you're not quite as confident. I mean, it looks all right. Like, you know, Roberto Osuna's had velocity concerns this spring. He's been down around 93, 94 when we're used to seeing him at 96, 97. He's dealt with some neck and back tightness, but his last two outings, it's been really good. He's been in the zone. His slider has been sharp. He's attacked. He's gotten good results. You know, Jason Grilli has been kind of hot and cold this spring. Velocity has been a bit down, but also 40-year-old man. Probably not going to be humping it up as, you know, as hard as he can in spring. J.B. Howell, Joe Smith took a bit of time to kind of find their feet, but they came around. Joe Biagini's doing Joe Biagini things. You know, I'm not as optimistic on the bullpen as I am on the starting rotation. I'm there. You know, I'm starting to get behind it.
Yeah,
I'm getting there.
It's a solid, solid group, and you know, ultimately, they're going to need the guys that are starting the season at AAA. Whether it's Danny Barnes, Chris Smith, we've talked about these guys all spring long, and those guys will end up coming up and contributing. But I think the key guy here is Osuna. So, what do you make of him and his progress? We talked to him this morning and, and you know, kind of discussed his velocity and the ups and downs of this spring. Where do you think he's at?
Well, so the velocity has been down, and he kind of told us when we talked to him this morning, I'm not worried about it. I had the rough outing against Italy at the WBC, but look, it was a bad day. We all have bad days. And, you know, he said he's over the neck and back thing. We haven't seen his velocity in his last two outings because the radar gun malfunctioned in Dunedin.
Did it, though?
Mysteriously. Didn't, yeah, just for Roberto Osuna's inning. It was just a coincidental, outage there. And then at Olympic Stadium here in Montreal, we haven't had radar readings all weekend for anybody. So we don't know where his velocity has been at, but he said he's confident that it'll come back. And you know, there's some reasons to believe that maybe he hasn't been throwing as hard as he can. this spring, you know, Russell Martin was talking about, look, he doesn't have to make a team anymore. So he's kind of experimenting with stuff and trying stuff. And Roberto Osuna has been playing around with a two-seamer. I think he kind of looked at his fly ball rate last year. Among MLB relievers, he was top 10 in terms of fly ball rate, 47.1%. It's a dangerous game to play at Rogers Center. If you look at his home run to fly ball rate, it's 10.2%. which is below league average for relievers, which indicates he was a bit fortunate in terms of relievers' home run fly ball rate. What do you got?
I mean, unless he's doing the Marco Estrada thing,
right? Yeah, which is the other possibility here. But I think that regardless, as a pitcher at the Rogers Center, you want to keep the ball on the ground. Unless Marco Estrada, that's key to his success. But I think, you know, for Roberto Osuna, you know, he's not exactly, you know, he doesn't have to kind of work all over the zone like Marco Estrada does because of diminished stuff. Like Roberto Osuna, if he has 96, 97, you know, if he can pump it in the zone and get, you know, soft contact on the ground, that's great. So he's been toying with that two-seamer, trying to get more ground balls. And I think it's really important for him when, say, like the other night, gives up a broken bat, leadoff single. Right, so you know, if Roberto Osuna puts a runner on in the ninth with a one-run lead, and you know, first it, you know, say it's an error or whatever, right? Like just a guy reaches to have something that he can get ground balls with and get a double play, at least not risk, you know, some sort of BABIP, bad luck, or a ball falling in, or just a mistake pitch. I think it'll help him. And he's been working on it. He says it's going well. So, but it takes quite a bit of command with the two-seamer. He's really been trying to get it backdoor to righties. So maybe that's why he's taken a bit of velocity off. That could be one reason why the velocity's been down. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that ground balls can only help. You would think, especially on a team where you have some pretty good infield defenders, it's always good. Hey, if he comes on with an inherited runner, say in the eighth inning of a close game, someone's on, he gets a double play. It's a bonus to be able to have that in your arsenal. But to me, until that velocity's back, it's still a question.
Yeah.
You know, and we've seen the 93s on those radar guns so far.
Yep.
Until you see those 95s and 96s, I'll be wondering, you know, what exactly is happening there.
It's strange at 22 to lose velocity like that. You know, like, and it's kind of unexplainable in a way without Roberto Osuna having some kind of reason for it. Like, that's strange at his age to lose that kind of velocity.
Yeah. And, you know, it was interesting. He was talking about the end of last year and the grind when he was used all the time. And he was saying that, you know, I think it was you asked him, is it more mental or physical? And he was like, man, it's physical. Like, it's a grind going out there and throwing every day. But here in spring training, essentially, he's been rested more regularly, and yet the velocity still isn't quite where they would want it to be.
I went back and looked at it. From September 3rd through the end of the regular season, Osuna never received more than two consecutive days of rest. And in the final 17 days of the regular season, he pitched on back-to-back days four times. He was used a lot. And I remember thinking it down the stretch of like, wow, they're using him a lot. And then when he came out with the shoulder discomfort in the wild card game, it was like, oh no, did they play with fire and get burned here? And then Osuna came back and was great for the rest of the playoffs. But I think that was seeing what you were just illustrating there and talking about, is that it wore on him, man. It takes a toll.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there comes a point in probably every pitcher's career where they're not able to go out there every single game with the same kind of stuff. And for some pitchers, maybe that's 25. For some, it's maybe 33. Who knows? I mean, for Osuna, it's obviously going to be a sliding scale, but maybe they can't just throw him out there with the same abandon that they might have in the course of a playoff run when he's 21 years old. Maybe there's a little more reason for caution right now.
It'd be nice if there's like another big arm in this bullpen, right? Like if you had another, you know, I don't want to say like closer type, but like just another, like, you know, mid to high 90s aggressive, you know, pitcher. Like Roberto Osuna is really the only guy in that mold in this bullpen. Like Ryan Tepera can throw 96, but he just hasn't been super aggressive and effective in his career. Beyond that, I mean, you've got guys who, you know, don't exactly have imposing velocity.
Yeah, and 96, well, impressive, isn't what it was 5-10 years ago.
No. We'll talk to Eric Gagne about that.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And we'll hear more from him, but you know, this is a guy who is touching 95 at 41 years old. And that's a testament to Eric Gagne and the kind of work that he's put in. But at the same time, there are a lot of guys in Major League Baseball right now who throw that hard. So it's not just the velocity. It's got to be someone who has a good secondary pitch, who can stay in the zone, who's able to stay composed in those big moments. And those guys aren't easy to find.
You know, I guarantee you this bullpen is going to change over the course of the season. You know, we're going to, like, you look at just last year, Joe Biagini and Jason Grilli, you know, just kind of, and Joaquin Benoit, you know, all became really important players. So I'm sure that there's going to be really important bullpen pieces, you know, going forward that we don't even really consider. Right now, Mike Bolsinger is on waivers, as reported by Mike Wilner. So it looks like Ryan Tepera is likely going north with the team. Also in kind of rostery news, reports from Buster Olney and John Heyman that Melvin Upton Jr. is being shopped, or at least that the Blue Jays are listening on offers for him. And, you know, Buster Olney going pretty far and saying it looks like Melvin Upton Jr. is not going to be a Toronto Blue Jay on opening day.
Right, which is a little bit of a surprise to me. I thought he was in that mix as someone being considered. We'll see how it all shakes out. And I think the bottom line here, regardless of how it ends up, when you're talking about someone like an Upton, who's at best the 24th or 25th man on this roster,
yeah,
I mean, I think that's safe to say, then those guys are going to be in trade talks. Those guys are going to be in limbo all year, because if you're a GM, you're always looking to improve on your roster, and it's a lot easier to improve on guy number 25 than it is to improve on Josh Donaldson. So you're always kind of thinking about, okay, how can we improve on Melvin Upton? How can we improve on Ryan Tepera? And it doesn't mean, it's not to insult those guys, but realistically, that's where you can find ways to improve your club.
Absolutely. You know, I think that it came right down to the wire with Melvin Upton Jr. and Ryan Goins and the debate about whether they, you know, who was going to be on this roster. We might still not see Ryan Goins on this roster. I mean, we won't know until noon on Sunday. That's when the Blue Jays have to file their opening day roster to Major League Baseball. And we expect to find out sometime around then exactly who's going to be on the 25. In Baltimore on Tuesday, I want to say, is the game, right? The first game, Tuesday?
Tuesday's the off day. Monday and Wednesday are the games.
Monday's the game. Man, that's soon. Yeah. It's about time. But it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But without Melvin Upton Jr., you have to assume Steve Pierce is going to see a lot of time in left field. You have to assume Ezekiel Carrera is going to be getting into some games.
Yeah.
That's how it's going to be.
Yeah. Safe assumption. All around, Justin Smoke, of course, in that mix as well when you look at first base and left field. And again, I mean, those are the positions that, you know, one of our guests on this podcast, Jonah Carey, will discuss in detail, but clearly there's room for an upgrade. So we're gonna be talking about these positions all year. I mean, it's not a one and done. Left field and first base are going to be the positions that we're talking about probably for the next 6 months.
Try to remember back to our conversation with Jonah Carey, which we had earlier today, and I don't know if he talked about Melvin Upton at length, but I feel like I should apologize in advance that if Jonah Carey sounds like he's talking about Melvin Upton as if he's a part of the Blue Jays, it's because we didn't know this at the time that we talked to Jonah, so forgive him.
It's been a long day.
He's a good lad. Oh, it's been a long weekend, pal. Speaking of first base, Rowdy Tellez hitting a bomb today at the O, which is not an easy ballpark to leave. Like, it's a big one. And he drove a pitch out to left field, going the opposite way. I asked him, I said, well, what did you see that at bat? And he goes, well, first pitch is a fastball. Second pitch is a fastball. Third pitch is a home run.
I love it. That's such that's the kind of thing that a fan would say from their couch at home, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what did Rowdy do? Oh, yeah, fastball, home run. I mean, this is like, normally you're used to hearing hitters describe it in such detailed terms, right? It was a cut fastball away. I was looking for the slider, and so I laid off, and then, you know, I was pounced on the heater. It's like, no, very simple terms. So I like, and maybe that's a reflection of the way Rowdy Tellez is enjoying the spring training. I mean, it seems like he's just keeping it simple and doing a really good job.
I also think that was like Rowdy Tellez's way of, like, he's such a nice boy, you know, and he didn't want to come out and say, look, you can't get your fastball by me three times in a row, but I'm gonna catch up to that. So I feel like that was his nice way of saying, look, if you're gonna throw three straight fastballs at me, I'm gonna get it on the third one.
Yeah,
I should have gotten it on the first or the second.
And he hit it out. So really one of the better stories of the Blue Jays this spring.
Yeah, great spring for Rowdy Tellez. And look, the Blue Jays management front office, they will talk him up at any chance that they get. And, you know, and look, and I think it's deserved because I think he has worked very hard, you know, in terms of his conditioning and nutrition, his body, his plate approach, his defense at first base. People rave about it now. He's been working with Justin Smoke on his footwork over there. You know, he's been talking to Troy Tulowitzki, Josh Donaldson about hitting. We were just in the clubhouse when, you know, the kind of at this point in spring, the major leaguers go in one direction, the minor leaguers go in another. Rowdy Tellez going around and like big hugs from everybody on the Blue Jays 25-man roster, like all the kind of regulars, Tulo, Smoke, like, you know, Donaldson, Pilar, like all those guys, big hugs for Rowdy Tellez. Even like Jared Saltalamacchia, a new guy to the organization. Looks like, you know, there's a lot of belief in Rowdy Tellez in this organization. I think it's real.
Right. And not to, you know, read too much into hugs, but I do think that I think there's something
hug
there.
Watch.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at, okay, how many minor leaguers did they bring to Montreal? 8 or 9?
Yeah, a good amount.
And there were not 8 or 9 minor leaguers going around and getting hugs.
Dwight Smith Jr. wasn't getting too many hugs in there.
So I think we can say that Tellez is someone who impressed not only the front office, not only the fans, but also his teammates. And that's something, because these guys have an eye for it. They know what kind of a challenge it is to hit major league pitching, what kind of a challenge it is to play defense at this level. And they saw Tellez, they evaluated him, and they like what they saw.
Yeah, you know, Rowdy Tellez is just at that like perfect point of prospectness where he's coming off of a really great year at AA. He's had a strong spring. You know, he's done positive work. Like, it's a similar spot that, say, a Justin Smoke was at one time in his career. You know, a Travis Snyder. You know, guys don't always work out. I would say more often than not, top prospects at least don't, you know, become what I think a lot of people believe they're going to be. They don't all become all-stars or MVP candidates or whatever, but I think that for the Blue Jays, who, when you look at their major league roster, what position players have they drafted and developed? Kevin Pillar. Outside of him, you know, Ryan Goins. Outside of those guys, they have not drafted and developed position players. So I think that it's a good sign that you got somebody like Rowdy Tellez and you know, a bit deeper in the organization, or Richard Urania, or, you know, a Bo Bichette, some young position players coming up to help at some point replace a roster that is built primarily on dudes in their 30s.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, if you want to win in the big leagues, you have to draft and develop your own position players. There's no question about that.
I think you absolutely do.
So look at the best teams in baseball. The Cubs obviously do that with guys like Bryan, Baez, Rizzo they traded for, but clearly
Schwarber was
drafted by the Cubs. Cleveland, same thing. I mean, this is a team that drafted and developed very, very well. You could look at Houston with Correa, like any of the top rosters, the Dodgers, Kershaw, of course, and others. So I think that it's a prerequisite for having a contending team. And at this point, the Jays have a very old roster. This is a group that is extremely experienced, and that can be good, but man, are they old. So they're going to have that next wave.
Look out for those extremely experienced Toronto Blue Jays.
They are, though, man. Look at that roster. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of experience, we should mention John Gibbons and his contract extension. Officially announced, they got the ink on the paper. This has been in place for a long time, but it was officially announced today, this morning. This has been a long day. You were right about that. It doesn't feel like this morning at all. But that's when that happened. Sean Gibbons said he feels like an honorary Canadian. You know, I think that, look, we talked about Gibby 2 podcasts ago or whatever. Those thoughts still hold true. I sometimes think about how much more difficult, I don't want to say difficult, but like how much more unpleasant this job would be if we had like the hard ass, like, piece of crap manager who's just grumpy and in a foul mood all the time, combative with people. And, you know, it's just John Gibbons, you know, that ultimate people person that we were talking about on that podcast a few weeks ago. It really just does make life easier and just nicer and more pleasant, not just for us, but I think for the Toronto Blue Jays. Russ Martin talked a bit about that after the game.
Yeah, he said that Gibby essentially a little bit like a father figure for some of the Blue Jays players. And yeah, it makes sense when you think about the age gap, certainly, and Gibby's experience in the game. And, you know, I think that for someone like Ross Atkins, when he came to Toronto, there really wasn't much familiarity. This is the first time we've heard Atkins address on the record these comments or this extension for John Gibbons.
Yeah.
And Atkins said that in the course of the year plus that he's worked with the Blue Jays and with Gibbons, he's had the chance to develop trust with him, which didn't exist before, of course. And it's essential for those guys because they're making so many decisions alongside each other, and they're trying to build a winning team that can win the World Series, a really tough thing to do when you're going up against teams like the Cubs. And yet they think that John Gibbons can be the guy to do that, and they've built that kind of trust in the last year and a bit.
We can also be honest about the fact that John Gibbons has gone to two ALCS series in a row. It's tough to fire that guy, right, after that level of success. And he was going into the final year of his deal. You don't really want that hanging over him in the club. Like, can you imagine getting into, say the Blue Jays are playing well in, you know, August, or, you know, and he still didn't have an extension? You don't want that to be the topic at that point. You don't want that to be like, well, our manager's got 60 days left on this team that's going back to the postseason. So I feel like in a way the Blue Jays had to extend him, but it's very good that they did.
Yeah, of course they had to. And I think that everyone would probably, you know, if they were being perfectly candid, would admit that that's part of it. But when you have a guy who's this successful, you know, you're in a good situation because it means that your team has won a lot. But at the same time, you can't exactly part ways with the manager who's second all-time in wins in your franchise history and who has just led the team to its most successful era since the glory days.
Did you notice that dodge when I asked Ross about it today?
What did you say?
I asked him pretty much what I just like explained, was like how much of a priority was it not to have a manager in the final year of his contract when you're trying to contend? And I said, well, it was more about our plans or something. You know what I mean? Like, it was just a complete like dodge, dip, dive, duck, and dodge. You know?
I mean, in the modern day,
if you can dodge a wrench. Go ahead.
You're going to hear a lot of dodges. So it's not just Atkins and Shapiro, but whenever someone dodges a question, it's almost like, okay, well, that's just the norm, like it or not. I mean, it's not great for our purposes, but it's the way it is.
Just all for being forthright and genuine.
That's why we have this podcast.
That's what I like in this world. That's right. Final Montreal reflections before we get on to Jonah Carey and Eric Gagne.
Anything it was cool. I love being in Montreal. It's
I love this city, man.
It's an awesome city.
I love this city.
Yeah.
I really do.
I hope they get a team back.
Oh, my God, do I ever. Yeah. I do. And I will be putting my resume in right away for any kind of media role I can get.
You're ready.
Yeah,
you're ready. No, it's an awesome, awesome city. I can't even imagine how fun it would be if they ever got an outdoor stadium.
Yeah. But, okay, there's snow outside the window right now.
Okay,
pal,
I'm not saying
April 1st.
Okay, I'm not saying right now, but here's the thing about Montreal. So in the summer, I feel like Montrealers embrace the warm weather better than anyone. Like
I'm with you on that.
They're so good at going outside to the park and just hanging out and enjoying the summer. And I feel like that would translate at the ballpark more so than being in a dome. Who wants to go to the dome in the middle of the summer in Montreal when you've already spent October to April inside?
Yeah.
You want to be outside in the summer. So I think you need to have an outdoor baseball park.
You do feel a lot like you're at like the casino in Vegas or something when you're in there. Like, especially the last couple of days, I noticed. I was like, what time is it? Like, what is there? Is the sun out right now? Is it daytime? Where am I? But I mean, look, the weather is a concern. So you'd have to, at least, it would have to be a retractable situation. Right?
You would think so. Or you play a lot of road games in April and you have a lot of home games in the summer.
Jeez. I mean, how many road games can you play in April? You can only start on the road for three series tops. You're not going to start for four series on the road.
I mean, they did it, man. Like, they played outdoor from, what was it, 69
and
to,
I'd say they learned a thing or two. I think the Blue Jays learned a thing or two from the X as well, right?
And it's not plan A, but I don't know. I think there's something to be said for playing baseball outside. And that was the era, too, like the 70s and 80s. That was the era of dome stadiums where domes were in vogue. Just think now when so much of your audience is on TV and you want to have a beautiful image to present to your viewers.
Yeah.
I think that matters. I don't think you want to show the Trop or the Big O or even Rogers Center when the dome is closed. I think it looks so much better to the viewers when it's a great image. I know that's only part of it. Obviously, yeah. You can't have people freezing.
Yeah.
But I just really like that outdoor stadium.
Well, then you design a retractable roof in sure. such a way that it shows off your skyline or shows off your waterfront or whatever you want it to show off. And then you show it off for 60 out of 82 or sorry, 81 or whatever, right? Like it helps for when it rains, too. That's the other thing that's really yep. nice about having a roof. No rainouts. You know you're going to get a game. That helps to play for a team that knows that half of its games are guaranteed to not have a rainout. That helps you with your travel. That you're not, you know, doubling back to cities later in games. You're not in the year, excuse me. You're not having to play double headers and, you know, burn, you know, through your bullpen. Like playing, it's crazy even that they play sometimes two baseball games in one day with right. the same 25-man roster. I guess they get 26, do they, on doubleheader days? Still, it's crazy. You get one more player.
And depending on the market too, you want to have a dome just because you have fans coming in from nearby cities.
Yeah.
You know, you want to have an assurance that if someone's coming from a couple hours away, they're not going to be shut out.
What about the folks in Laval, right? What about Gatineau? What about all the people who will come in to see this team?
For sure. And if you're going to try to capture the attention of a market, Montreal can't be the entirety of that market. You have to have a broader market, and that's what we've seen with the Jays and so much of their success.
I think one thing that we do know is that the if there is a future Montreal insert team name here, they cannot play at the O.
You don't say.
As nice as it was, as cool as it is to see baseball back there, not a major league facility.
What do you mean insert team name? They're obviously going to be called the Expos, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know the legal stuff behind it. There might be complications there. You would think they'd be called the Expos.
I would be very disappointed.
You would think.
If they were called anything other than the Expos.
I'm trying to think of other examples of like cities that got their teams back and changed them. I know the Jets got, or the Winnipeg Jets got to be the Jets again. I'm trying to think of other examples. Yeah, I guess they'd probably be called the Expos. But it's also kind of a weird name, isn't it? Expos, like because it was called as Expo after like the
Expo 67.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So like, why you're naming your team after like an event that happened in your city?
Right. I mean, there are a lot of weird names. I mean, the Red Sox are a weird name, but we wouldn't change that name.
That is a weird name. But there's history, like significant history to that.
Same with
dating back to like you know the 1900s, like history.
Expos were founded like 50 years ago.
Yeah. That's
a long time.
Red Sox, we're talking about 100 years.
Oh, yeah, it's still a long
time. That's a lot more history. Oh, well. The Blue Jays is a good name.
Great name.
Like that name. I like the name Jonah Carey. I also like the name Eric Gagne. And those are the guys who are going to be coming up first. Jonah Carey. Coming up after this, we're going to talk more about Montreal baseball. We'll talk a bit about the Blue Jays. We'll talk about a lot of stuff after this on At The Letters. Joined by Seth Rogen lookalike, Jonah Carey, here in the press box at the Big O. How's it going, Jonah?
I've always been hit more sound alike than lookalike, but I went out for dinner last night, and the waiter comes over. He goes, "Has anybody ever told you? You know, you look and sound a lot like that." And he kind of hesitates, and whatever language, I'm not sure what he speaks. Honestly, everybody in Montreal speaks this like hybrid of 100 languages.
Right.
And so I said, "Oh, like Seth Rogen." And he didn't understand that I was acknowledging that I sounded like him, not that I was him. So the check comes. And he goes, "I need your autograph, although I'm sure that other people are used to you giving them autographs." And I'm just looking around like, wait, do you actually think I'm... So yes, apparently I'm Seth Rogen.
Wow.
Yes.
So your autograph is floating around there and someone's going to try to sell that or frame it or something.
Listen, those scallops are very good.
Nice.
Yes.
Well, that counts for something. Well, thanks for joining us.
Yes.
This is going to be fun.
At my, this is like my homeland. I grew up in this place.
Yeah.
Literally, I didn't have a home growing up. I just grew up in the city. Yeah.
What are your memories of this place growing up?
We would always buy tickets for the right field bleachers up until at least high school. They were $2. And sometimes we would stay there, but often we would just sneak down and get into the better seats. And I started when I was younger. My grandfathers used to take me. I got older. I used to go with my friends. And we would always go into art class in high school, and we'd make signs. So Delino DeShields, we'd make a sign that said, Delino DeShields, the Rookie of the Year, and we would hold it up, and people would see it. And then the best was we'd make a sign that said, the Maple Ridge Boys, which is after Larry Walker, who's from Maple Ridge, British Columbia.
Of course.
So my friends and I decided that we were the Maple Ridge Boys. We're the big Walker fans, especially when he was first coming up. And we'd sit in the right field bleachers. Walker was a right fielder. He's a rookie or whatever. He'd see this, and he'd pitching change. He'd come over and be like, dudes, this is great, because he's a hoser. You know, he's like, dudes, this is amazing. We'd start chatting with him about Cam Neely or whatever Maple Ridge news is going on. And so, yeah, it was just very – it was all very informal. You know, I feel like you go to Yankee Stadium, and there's Jeter, and there's this or that. It's all procedural. Here, it just – it was so – organic. It was so light. People didn't take themselves seriously. It was a fun time to go to Expos games.
I'd imagine your ballpark experiences evolved a bit as you got older. No,
yeah. I mean, we drank more.
That's what I'm getting at, Jonas.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and as kids, before we were drinking, we were still jerks. We threw strawberries at Daryl Strawberry.
Did you?
That literally happened, which is probably not the best thing to do. 14 or something like that. He was terrorizing us. He hit a ball. I was here for opening day, 88, I think it was, and I was sitting left field side, top of the stadium, and he hit it right field side over the roof.
Whoa.
Off Randy St. Clair. If you ever see Randy St. Clair, you can ask him about this. It was an 87-mile-an-hour batting practice fastball, and I've never seen a ball hit that far, and he tormented us. So we would get, like, crates of strawberries. We'd have to wait because we knew we'd get punted from the stadium.
Yeah.
Wait until the eighth inning when the Mets were inevitably smoking the Expos 10-1, and we'd start throwing the strawberries.
I mean, it's not like you're throwing batteries.
No. We don't want to injure. You know? We don't want to be
He might be hungry.
Offensive. He could be hungry.
He might need a snack.
He should have a little bit of cream, get some Wimbledon action going on. That'd be good.
Get the glucose levels up. Did he look back and see it? Did he...
I think we purposely made our aim a little bit. We didn't want to really hit him. We just wanted to make him aware that we were throwing strawberries.
Right.
Awesome. So when you see the stadium filled now,
you
know, it's got to be a different experience than it would have been coming here to this huge, huge stadium.
Huge.
Olympic Stadium is massive, and presumably most of the time you were here wouldn't have been nearly this full.
It's funny. The first game I ever went to was, I know this because I went and looked, August 1st, 1982. I was 7. And it was Joaquin Andujar against Steve Rogers. Both those guys were aces. The Cardinals and the Expos were both very good in 82. And it was more than 51,000 people was the attendance. That's the first game I ever went to. So, you know, I think that especially for a younger generation or whatever, and there's no team, obviously the attendance didn't go well. When I tell them that story, they're like, well, you're obviously lying. I said, go look on Baseball Reference. There were 51,000 people. So there was a point at which it had that, and it obviously dissipated over time. And I'm used to this. This is the fourth year that we've done these.
Yeah, fourth.
We, as if I had anything to do with it. The fourth year these games have been going on, but the first year I'd been one time between the last season and then, which was I went to Grey Cup in 2009 or whatever.
Yeah.
Was there to see the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. It had nothing to do with anything. Or whoever was playing, I don't remember. One of the Rough Riders. Anyway, and we go into the stadium and I'm with like some buddies and people are chanting Let's Go Expos and they're wearing the gear. And I hadn't seen any of this for really more than a decade because the team was a lost cause at the end. And I'm crying and it's full and I'm freaking out or whatever. It's a little bit more normal now. Like, oh, Denny Boucher, that's cool. Okay. Denny, how are you? You know, rains or whatever. I could see people and not be crazy about it because it's become a little bit more habitual. And, in fact, the stadium's pretty full today, but it's not entirely full. The last 3 years, they were all sellouts.
Right.
So it's not to say that there's still good attendance and good interest, but the electricity has died down a little bit from year one.
Yeah, is there anything to read into that? We are seeing some empty seats this weekend.
This is supposed to be a novelty, right?
Yeah.
You know, people say, well, is this a test of attendance and interest in Montreal? I don't really buy that. I think that's a long-haul scenario. And you ultimately have to build that through generations. If you get an expansion team, you don't really know what you get until the kids grow up and become ticket holders or whatever. So, you know, to me, there's always going to be some number of fans. There could be 30 or 40 for these games or whatever. And the test will come. Really, you'll just have to jump in and find out. They're not going to have a AAA team or whatever. If there's a team, it'll just be, we're going for it and we're going to see what happens.
Do you think that for any sort of hope for baseball to be back here, Major League Baseball to be back here, is that possible until the A's and Rays resolve what's going on with their situations?
That's definitely the first thing. And it's funny, you know, every single year that they have these exhibition games, somebody leaks a story a couple days before.
Right.
And I was just talking to Fred Daigle, the reporter who put out the story, who caused the big fight. Fred is diligent and a good young reporter and all that stuff. But it is the case that there are vested interests that want to kind of keep the momentum going. I know who these vested interests are. I have had meetings with them. And it's going to be that way. But there's a mechanism, I mean, to make it happen. And I really do believe that there's a possibility. But as you said, I mean, the Rays and the A's has to come first. That has to be resolved. And really, the more broad question is, what is the mechanism, right? It's either relocation or expansion. I honestly think expansion is more likely. One team has moved in 40 years. It's that team.
Right.
And, yeah, okay, the Rays don't draw a lot. But the Expos were Chernobyl compared to the Rays. The Rays, at least, are a viable product with a real owner.
Yeah.
You know, the Expos were a neglected stepchild or whatever. This is not a place to play baseball. So you have a different scenario. And the other thing is, monetarily, it's a $2 billion Canadian investment, if you think about it. Relocation or expansion, because the franchise values have gone up so much. As far as expansion goes, what incentive would the owners have to let you into the club if not for the money? Plus, you have to build a new stadium. And with the exchange rate, it's $2 billion. I'm not saying that Bell or... I know we don't love Bell in these parts, but that's probably who we're talking about. A company like that doesn't have the means to do it. There's a certain synergy. Obviously, the Blue Jays and Rogers have been a mutually beneficial thing. Could be the same thing here. But the bottom line is, it's still $2 billion. And it's not going to be Stephen Brofman or Mitch Garber, some of the local. They'll be in.
Right.
They'll be the faces of the franchise. But you need a big-ass corporation to go ahead and say, here's a lot of money. That's a big step.
I think if you are making progress, the last thing you want to do is talk publicly about it and have reports like that coming out, even if what was in them was accurate. I feel like you do want to, you know, have some decorum here, and you do want to be pretty quiet about it.
But I think they have. I feel like it's more dribs and drabs. You know what I mean? It's... nobody's making promises about it being tomorrow. It's sort of like, we're on the right track, we're on the right track. And again, having talked to some of these people, that's sort of what they want. They want it to be people to be vaguely aware that there's an effort going on, but not to suggest that it's going to be tomorrow. Do the next thing.
Booking your next appearance.
Jonah's very popular around here, as you might imagine.
My buddy Joe Block, he's the Pirates radio announcer. I'm going to go on the next inning with him. I think it's something that could happen, but I think it's down the road. And Fred and I were just talking, and he said, well, I don't know, the Rays could be in trouble. I said, yeah, but they're tied into a lease, and there's all these things going on. To me, I think it'll happen. I think it's like 7, 8, 10 years from now.
And how much trouble can a franchise be in if they get 130 of all the MLBM money? I mean, if you're a Major League Baseball franchise, almost by definition now, you have a lot of things in your favor. So if you do get those last remaining things, like a stadium in place, even the A's and Rays might be able to make it.
Well, 100 per BAM is a money machine. I mean, they make money from the NHL now. I mean, it's an insane thing. So, yeah, you don't really – you could have empty stadiums. I mean, it's mostly optics stadiums now, honestly. It's the local TV deals, the national TV deals, BAM, various other ancillary revenue streams. So, of course. And, you know, this argument of, oh, well, they didn't draw before. You know, if they built a small stadium of 32,000 people and they had it mostly full and it was a nice location, it's fine. Like, these will be viable. But it goes back to my original point. Because it's almost any idiot can make money now in Major League Baseball, the buy-in necessarily has to be high.
Right. Where do you stand on expansion? If the MLB wanted to go to 31, 32, where are you at on that?
I'm much more in favor of expansion than relocation for a couple reasons. Number one is, I would never wish a city to lose its team. It sucks. I'm friends with Seattle.
Have you been there?
Been there. It's tattooed on my forehead. Seattle Supersonics fans. I'm friends with various fans of others. And it sucks for all of us.
Yeah.
So we don't want any of that. And the other thing is, I just don't like it when the Blue Jays have to play... well, the Pirates. I mean, this is an exhibition game, but like in the pennant race is going on, and who are we playing? Are we playing the Yankees? No, the Pirates. No, we're playing the Braves. That's why. I don't – it's not fair because the schedules can be twisted that way, and I think it kind of erodes whatever. Maybe it's because I'm older and I'm used to traditional pennant races or whatever. I don't object to interleague period. I think the Yankees-Mets, and there's certain things that have merit, but the Twins and the – Phillies doesn't, I don't know why. And so if you get even number of teams, it's 16 per league. You can schedule it however you want. You don't need to worry about interleague every single day.
So you mentioned Tim Raines before. You mentioned Tim Raines before, and such a cool thing that he's here being honored and going into the Hall of Fame. And, of course, you were a part of that in a way. Obviously, he's the one who stole the bases and put up the 70 war and everything like that.
Yes.
But you gave him a bump. So what's been that... what's been the coolest thing about seeing Tim Raines go into the Hall of Fame, or at least be elected into the Hall of Fame, and now be honored here at Olympic Stadium?
69 war, let's be nice about this.
wow.
Yeah, no, he... thank you. He... it's great. And the thing that makes me happy is that, like, I've gotten to know him a little bit. He's just a good guy. He's a good guy. He's got little girls that he's raised. We talk about our twins when we see each other. Right. Like, how's it going with the twins? His are a year younger than mine. He's just trying to make it in the world or whatever. And I'm not saying that every nice guy should be in the Hall of Fame. The numbers have to be there. But it's nice to hitch your wagon to somebody, for better or for worse, who happens to be, oh, it'll be cool to see this guy honored. You don't walk around baseball. People aren't like, oh, that jerk. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love Bonds. I'm a huge Bonds fan. But if Bonds were to get in, there'd be resentment for 1,000 reasons, ranging from petty to, you know, I'm the media. They treated me poorly, which I don't buy, to PEDs, to whatever. There's nothing with Reigns. You know, he's a sweetheart. He's good intentions and all that stuff. So it's great. And it goes both ways for me. I mean, there could not have been a more perfect baseball player for me to champion because he was underrated. He was a candidate that required statistical scrutiny, which is how I've made my career, really.
Right.
And he's an expo. I mean, it's loved Carter, loved Dawson. Like Dennis Martinez had maybe not a Hall of Fame, but pretty close to a great career. Is that gone?
Doesn't
unclear.
Sound like it.
Not gone.
Doesn't sound like
But yeah, with Reigns, it's just sort of a nexus of a bunch of different things. It's great. One of the things I'm doing next week, which is awesome, I'm so excited about this. Whenever a player gets inducted to Hall of Fame, a few months before, they invite them for a private tour.
Yeah.
And they're allowed to invite two media members. Their media family, like wife, and basically, and two media members.
Right.
Me, Bob Elliott, and Reigns are going to Cooperstown, closed Hall of Fame next week,
wow,
to tour the place and like screw around with Babe Ruth's back.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. That I'm excited about.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be super fun.
I hope they check your bag on the way out. That's what I...
Is that Willie Mae? What's that? What is that? Yeah.
You mentioned the stats. You know, I think Tim Raines has had a better career than some people who are in the Hall of Fame already.
Yeah.
But, you know, last year on the ballot, was there a point when you were nervous, you know, in those kind of 24 to 48 hours before it was announced, where were you leaning?
By that, Ryan Thibodeau, not Mr. Tibbs, I think, on Twitter. I'm going to try to get there. Yeah. Seems to be a good dude and all that stuff, and really did a good service where he tracks all the ballots. You know, something like 60% of the ballots were in, and he was at 80, whatever.
Yeah.
And even accounting for the public-private split, you knew that he was going to get in at that point. So the nerves were not really there. I didn't expect him to get 86% of the vote. I was surprised by that.
Seems like a lot of people decided he was suddenly a Hall of Famer.
Right? Here's what I'll say.
You put up some really good numbers in 2016, apparently.
Here's what I'll say. There was always, you know, I wrote my first article about Reigns. The first year was on the ballot, 07 or something like that. I was like a freelancer for ESPN 47,000 jobs ago. And time went on, and the media, the world started sort of recognizing, but it was a slow process. And I got a list. Thibodeau sent me a list of all the people who hadn't voted for Reigns. I just emailed all of them. I said, here you go. Here's all this stuff. And John Tomasi, a columnist for the Boston Herald, said, a writer I respect, I hate him now because why is he pestering me with all this stuff? But most of the people were receptive or whatever, and I know for a fact that many of them flipped their votes. They might have flipped their vote anyway because it was the last time on the ballot. I'm not claiming specific responsibility.
Right.
I'm just saying that there was a general momentum toward this happening. And so by the time you got down to it, it was like, all right, it feels good. But when they announced his name on TV, and whatever, it's his thing and not my thing, but CBS, who I work for, is like, you need to have a camera on you to track your reaction. I did, or whatever. And it was great. It was cool. Like, it's a little meta. You don't want to be, you know, we're part of the media. Like, we don't want to, it's not about us. But it was cool just because other people get to share the joy that we kind of have collectively as Expos fans, as Reigns fans. And I thought that was neat because, as you said, the guy hadn't played in so long.
Yeah.
So for other people to understand, this is what it means to me. This is what it means to my buddies, Elan and Brian and Dave and Eric, the people I went to games with. That's great.
I think it's especially tough to flip people now because ballots are getting crowded. A lot of people going to 10 on their ballots. That sounds good.
I think that people don't know how to judge a fly ball.
Yeah, no, no.
It's been
a
while. You need regular games now.
But you're seeing a lot of 10, you know, 10 people using all 10 of their votes on their ballot because you got a lot of good players coming through these, you know, in these last couple of years.
Yeah, no, that's definitely been the case. And it's, you know, the electorate's more progressive. They drop guys off the ballot, older voters, people who write for golferswest.com. God. By the way, I have 7 years to go until I get my ballot.
Do you?
Not that I'm complaining or anything like that.
I think we've got eight.
Yeah, at least. Yeah.
Here's what I will gently say. God bless Golfers West. I'm pretty sure the three of us have a better finger on the current pulse of baseball than they do. That's all. Anyway, so things have changed, and the result of full ballots is not, it's not a lack of scrutiny. It's a lack of representation. The 80s are massively underrepresented. Trammell, Whitaker.
Right.
Yeah, I can make a case for you about Dave Steve, by the way.
Right.
There are these guys who are very good candidates who just didn't get the attention they deserve. This is the result.
July, you'll be there?
I will be there. again, in a very zealot kind of way, not only will I be there, the night before Reigns' induction, there is a party for Reigns. I am throwing it.
Awesome.
I, like, call the caterers. Like, I planned a wedding for Reigns.
So cool.
Well, but it's ridiculous. Like, there's no team, right? So who's normally the Yankees? Okay,
right.
Derek Jeter.
Yeah.
The Jays? Okay, well, Jesse Barfield's going in? No problem. Like, no, I have to do it.
So you're taking the place of the New York Yankees.
Yes,
no,
I am.
No pressure. No pressure.
No, and not only that, I got a check from the New York Yankees. Literally are writing me a check to plan the party, and it's made out to me. So I could, like, take the Yankees' money and go to Mexico right now. It's pretty great.
What's on the menu? Have you decided?
Oh, the menu's going to be good. It's a place, I'm pretty sure it's going to be a place called Mel's at 22, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And it's like carving stations. We're discussing raw bar. Raw bar, it depends if we get a little bit more money, then we might go oysters up the wazoo. I love that we're talking in depth about the menu. But yeah, it's going to be very exciting.
Big decision.
And now that I've said this, I just realized that people are going to try to crash this party and I'm in big trouble. Anyway.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. It's my, I blab a lot.
What do you make of these Blue Jays? I mean, where do you assess them in the scope of the AL East? Pretty competitive division. So where do you have them?
I mean, I have them, I think, where the masses have them, which is in contention and as an 85-ish win team, which stat heads like to use the term margin of error. That's within the margin of error. That implies that they could be a 500 team. It implies that they could win the division. I mean, those things are in play. I don't believe that the Red Sox are unimpeachable. I think they are the most talented team, but that doesn't mean they're guaranteed to win. And there are a lot of ways in. Wild card teams have won the World Series. Last year was very exciting when they won the wild card. So I think that there's a lot of good things happening. I've said it a couple times. I'm disappointed in the way that they've handled first base / left field. The inclination that I get from, and I talked to Ross Atkins for a preseason story, was they're going to use Steve Pearce a lot more than as a platoon guy. And if he truly gets 550 at-bats, you've basically solved one of those two problems.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the Carrera-Upton thing. Carrera's the wrong side of a split. It doesn't really work at all. Listen, Justin Smoke, I'm sure, is a nice fellow. I'm sure he's nice to animals and his mom. But you got to do better than that. And I was a little disappointed by that. But, I mean, still good rotation.
Yep.
You know, you still have good core players. Donaldson's an MVP candidate. I think the Bautista bounces back a little bit. So it's a good team. It's just I would be frustrated on behalf of Jays fans if you get down to it. It's like, oh, this team missed the playoffs by a game. Why is Justin Smoke your first baseman? You know what I mean? And I know I'm supposed to be an impartial analyst or whatever, but I get frustrated on behalf of any team. If I was doing an Astros interview, I'd say, why did the Astros stop at X? I feel like the Jays stopped. I'm not sure why, but they did.
You mentioned the rotation last one before we let you get on to your next appearance.
No problem.
Here, you're waving as people walk by.
That's Chris.
Oh, yeah, it's Chris Block. Yeah. You mentioned the rotation. Led the American League in the ERA last year.
Yes.
Very good.
Yes.
You know, some people say, well, you gotta expect some regression. You can't expect them to be that good again. Some people say, well, why can't they? You've got two young starters, Marcus Stroman, Aaron Sanchez, who should take a step. You've got dependable veterans. Francisco Liriano has looked like a Cy Young candidate spring. Where do you fall on that?
Regression isn't something where you're expecting doom for a specific reason. It just is. And I actually think Stroman is probably the guy with the most potential to bounce. I mean, Sanchez kind of had his breakout. Stroman, injury, and then last year he was good, but mislocated a few pitches or whatever. So, there is potential for improvement, but just because of the cosmos, things happen. It could be – the rotation was pretty healthy last year. That's
sure
one
was.
Thing I'll say. I'm not jinxing anything, but that could fall back a little. So the hope is that you have safeguards. And actually, I'm such a nerd about this, but one of the things I get most excited about is that they acquired Howell and Smith, who are like 19 and 20 on the roster. But the whole point of those guys is you don't have to put Sanchez through the meat grinder. It's a sixth inning. It looks like he's pretty gassed. You bring in Howell, he can get a double play.
Yeah.
He's not the best pitcher in the league, but you've got competent middle relief. Teams don't have that. That's a big thing. So I liked – again, I didn't love the way that they handled the big bats. Obviously, Eddie, it'd be nice if he was on the team or whatever. But getting Pierce cheap, getting Howell, getting Smith, the flyers that they've taken, obviously Biagini has worked out very well. They've just done a good job of kind of populating. And more in baseball, you just realize it's not a Stars and Scrubs game. Mike Trout is – we're watching Willie Mays right now. He is literally Willie Mays. And his team is hot garbage because they don't have anything. Depth – I don't mean depth like a backup second baseman. I mean, is your number 8 hitter good? Is your number 4 starter good? It's not in the case of Anaheim. It's not bad in the case of the Jays. Missing a couple pieces, but at least they're taking care of most of the details, which I really like.
Got anything else, Ben?
I think we should let Jonah go.
Yeah,
Pittsburgh Radio is waiting.
Very generous with your time. Jonah Carey, we can read you in many, many places.
CBS Sports and NSI are the big ones. And Sportsnet doing TV and radio on Fan 590.
Awesome. Thanks,
Jonah.
Thanks, fellas. After life, oh my God, what an awful word.
thanks to Jonah Carey for joining us once again on At the Letters. After this, Cy Young winner, three-time All-Star, and on the comeback trail, Eric Gagne. After all the ambulances go, after all the hangers-on, done hanging on in the dead light of the afterglow. Please be joined now, Cy Young winner, three-time All-Star, Montreal's own, Eric Gagne. You probably have fond memories of this ballpark where we are, Olympic Stadium. You made a start here. I think you got...
Didn't go so well.
Well, you gave up a homer to, I think, Orlando Cabrera, the first batter.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, right. And on like the second pitch of the ball game, they settled in after that. What do you remember about pitching here?
I was really nervous. I had to give a lot of tickets, a lot of friends. That was the worst part, I think. The ticket list, I had like 1,500 guys, but it was the best feeling, you know, especially playing against the Expos. That was a dream come true.
Yeah.
And for me, just to be here at the stadium, it was pretty special. And now I have a chance to relive that. That was really, really cool. And for me to go out there and give up, I think it was two home runs I gave up.
In the first inning, yeah.
Yeah,
I was helping you there.
I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to forget those bad dreams. But no, I think I gave up two home runs. Lefty Lee Stevens.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Change up, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a very precise memory. This one's stuck with
me. I'm going back into memory, that's why. But yeah, I think I gave up two home runs. And I think I went five innings. It was good. It was fun. But
it was early in your career.
I wasn't ready for that. And I was starting.
Yeah.
So you grew up in Montreal. So did you come here as a fan ever? And what was that experience like?
Yes, I came in as a fan a lot, and I snuck in a lot too, without paying. So I'm sorry. That's probably my fault. They left, right? But no, I came in a lot, and I used to actually live on Harrod Street right here because I used to go to school, and I lived there with my friends. I was probably 15 years old. Used to come to games a lot, and it's pretty special to be back here.
Looked like you were enjoying the WBC.
Oh, that was fun. Yeah, that was the best feeling. That's the reason why I'm trying to come back, I think.
Yeah.
I want to get ready for this. I missed the first three because I was either hurt or just new contract winning team. So for me to get ready for that, I called Greg Hamilton. I told him, I said, hey, I feel pretty good. And I pitched in Ottawa, and I came back really, really good from it. So I told Greg Hamilton, if you have a spot, I know I'm old, but I can do it. So I got ready. It took about 8-9 months to get ready for this. And then probably a couple of weeks before that, I felt like I could come back because I could, I could pretty much play catch every day. My arm feels good. I bounce back really good. So for me, that was pretty much that was when I decided to go back.
I mean, velocity was certainly there. The stuff was there. The changeup looked really nice. But even just getting back into that competitive environment had to be nice. Just back in front of fans, things like that.
It's nerve-wracking, And if, fear of failure. Always. I've always been scared. I mean, you go out there, you're scared, and you just got to face the music. But, like you said, I came back bases loaded.
Yeah.
That was my first time in nine years facing hitters competitively. So I'm like, whoa.
Welcome back.
That's a little different. Yeah. And the umpire's trying to squeeze me. I'm like, that's not right. But it was fun. It was a great, great experience. And just to represent your country, you go out there and, it's a lot of fun. And hopefully I can go to the Olympics. That'll be my next goal.
Were you ever surprised when you looked up at the scoreboard and saw 95 up there?
No, trust me, I got a gun in my house.
You knew.
I don't want to go out there and embarrass myself and go through 81 mile an hour. But there's nothing wrong with 81, for whoever throws 81. But Mr. Weaver.
None of our listeners can throw 81. he's still out there.
Of course. I give him a hard time because I know he's a good guy. So, but, I knew how hard I was throwing. I knew my stuff. I knew I was playing catch with Jess and Therrien, and a bunch of guys come with me and train with me. So I kind of knew where I was, but it's a different thing to take it from batting practice or mound to take it for the game, and I did that pretty well, so that was a great experience.
How did you feel in between outings? Was that a bit of a, getting back into that rhythm and that routine? How was that for you?
Well, that was the hardest part, I think, the bounce back period, and that took me about 3 months, I think. My arm was ready 4 or 5 months ago, but the bounce back is, your body, my back, and everything else. It felt really good, and, of course, I got to work out differently, but I know my body real well now, so I just kind of go out there and I'm in the pool a lot. I got to be in the pool because it helps my back. But it feels great. I bounced back really good. And I didn't, out of nowhere. I have no idea why I feel that good. But I'm here.
and you've been talking to the Dodgers about a potential deal, talking to some other teams as well. Are you really looking forward to, it sounds like, getting back out there potentially with a major league organization?
I'm looking forward to be back on the mound. I'm not looking for it to be sore every single day, but that's part of it. But no, I feel great. I mean, it's just talking to a bunch of teams, and, you know, there's interest, but there's interest on my part where I want to be. And, you know, we're going there, and right now at the end of spring training, they got to release a lot of guys. There's a 40-man roster. They got to really look into it. And I'm 41. You can't release a 20-year-old that throws 100 mile an hour for a 41-year-old. So I think it's going to take a lot of shuffling around, a lot of luck for me to be lucky to get, you know, get a spot, I think, from injury and stuff like this. But, you know, I'm ready. I told the Dodgers, I told all the teams I'm willing to go to AAA and prove myself again. So I think it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time.
Are you confident something's going to get done?
Yeah, I feel good. I mean, my body feels good, so I'm going to keep going out there, keep trying to throw. I'm throwing there with them every single day.
Right.
So they know I'm ready. They know I'm there. So hopefully, I'm not going to say it's 100% sure, but I feel really confident.
How much has the game changed in the, you know, since like 2009 was your last year in the majors? How much has it changed?
It's changed a lot. I mean, it's a specialty. I think it's a specialty game. Now you got the relievers that, you know, of course, I want one inning, so I can't complain.
Yeah.
But you have a lot of guys down seventh, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth inning, so that's the same thing. But I think the guys are a lot better. I mean, the pitchers, they throw a lot harder. But, you know, the experience I got, I think that's what got me through the WBC. And I think that's really the value I got is my knowledge and, you know, what I've been through, the ups and the downs of my career, so I can really help the young guys.
As someone who was once a very dominant closer for the Dodgers, what is your reaction when you watch a guy like Kenley Jansen on the mound doing what he does?
It's making me mad. It makes me really mad because it looks too easy. I mean, it's not that easy. There's no way you can go out there like Mariano did and just throw one pitch. I mean, these guys are freaks. These guys are special. And, you know, these guys are – you don't really – say, you know what, that kid, he need to do this because no one can do that. So it's pretty special. These guys are good, and there's a reason why they got paid that much money, and they're that good for so long. And, you know, Mariano's Hall of Fame for a reason. He's going to be – I don't know, is he Hall of Fame right now?
Not yet.
I feel like he is, even though he's not in.
Yeah.
He's not
Everyone just assumes he is.
Like for a year, I think. But, no, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. And, you know, these guys are special. But you see Kenley out there every single day. What he did in the playoffs last year, that was pretty ridiculous. Threw a lot of innings. He's such a big body. He's a fresh arm. And he can do it. He's a horse.
It's been such a thankless job for years, you know, especially in your day, the kind of one-inning high-leverage reliever. Is it cool to see those guys getting rewarded now, you know, getting some money and really being valued by teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think the managers now start to basically manage backwards. You know, you have the eighth inning or ninth inning guy, and you have your sixth and seventh. And that's why the guys only go five or six innings, because the bullpens are a lot better. People say, oh, this guy doesn't throw as much anymore. Well, you don't have to.
Right.
You got guys in the back of the pen, they're ready, they're pretty much automatic. And I think that's the reason the way it changed, the game changed, where you used to have, you know, you got Kershaw, which is another freak that goes seven, eight innings every single time. But the game has changed that way. I mean, there's not as much running as the hitters. There's a lot more power and stuff like this. It has changed. But for relievers, I think the biggest change is in relief. You have guys that go out there for one inning, one out, one hitter, and it's a big difference.
It seems like every guy is throwing 96 out of the pen
now.
It's
crazy.
It's a standard.
I mean, I go into camp. There's guys going 105 mile an hour. I'm like, this, there's no way that gun is right. There's
right,
no way
yeah.
their guns are right.
Yeah.
Another way that the game has changed, it seems like, is that teams now need so many different guys to get through a season, especially on the pitching staff. Mm-hmm. So is that, you know, as someone who's looking to at some point break in onto an MLB roster this year, is that reassuring, knowing that they'll need a lot of guys?
I don't want to say reassuring because I'm almost hoping for someone to get hurt, but it is, especially now with the 10-day DL.
Yes.
I mean, that's going to make a huge difference. I mean, you're going to have guys that you can put them on a 10-day DL. They're not missing that much. And then you can use those guys in the minor leagues, bring them up, almost fill in. I want to call them fill in because they're major league pitchers. But it changes the game a lot. I mean, I think it's a really smart move to do the 10-day DL because it's going to give a lot of teams a lot more leverage on bringing a guy up and down. And I think last year, I mean, the Dodgers had, I think, 14 starters. People get hurt. I mean, they throw harder, but they get hurt a little bit more. So, I mean, that's a give and take on velocity. The harder you throw, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah, I think that 10-day DL is going to be a game changer this year.
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be
very different.
It's going
to be a very big difference. I think you'll see on the bullpens a lot. I think you'll see a revolving door where you get a lot of guys coming in and out with a DL. Older guys, I think it's going to help the older guys too, because let's say I go out there for, you know, a couple weeks and I'm getting old, I'm getting sore. That 10-day DL is going to help me a little bit.
Was there a turning point for you when you decided you wanted to come back and you wanted to do this?
The turning point, I think, was before the WBC when I threw live batting practice with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
And the next day, I threw a bullpen again. So the back-to-back days, that was my biggest.
Right.
That was my biggest test, I think, to see my body, how my body would react. But it's funny because I still wake up every day. I'm like, oh, something's gonna hurt.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't. So I'm waking up. That's kind of weird. But you know, I think just pitching in Ottawa that first day and then come back the next day, I play catch a little bit. I felt good.
Yeah.
But the big test, I think, was back-to-back days with the Dodgers.
Have you had to change the way you work out, the way you train from when you were playing before?
Oh, yeah, we totally changed a lot
big
of
deal.
Things. But now you're older or smarter, so I wish that's what every single athlete would say. Once you retire, you wish you had the brain
right.
body would follow. And
then,
you know, it just doesn't happen. Hopefully I can have a year or two where I can hopefully, you know, get that going together. But, yeah, of course, I would do a lot of things different. I wouldn't run as much like I did. I would probably be in the water a lot more. But I would ask for days off a lot more than I did.
Right.
You know, but I don't really regret anything because I think that the guys really respect me the way I work so hard and the way I pitch every single day. So that's give and take.
Awesome. Well, hopefully we see you up in the major leagues.
Yeah. Hey, wishing you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Thanks to Eric Gagne for joining us on the podcast. He's a very busy man at the O today, in high demand. Everybody wanted a piece of his time, but he was very friendly with it, told some cool stories, and kind of cool to see him on the comeback trail. Coming back.
It's a great story. Just to have a former Cy Young winner and someone who initially signed with the Dodgers in 1995?
Whoa.
And now it's 2017.
Whoa.
And he's probably
I was 7, 8
yeah.
Like geez,
a long time ago.
Yeah,
a long time. And hopefully
still in shape, man. I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
just standing next to him today.
I think if anything, he's lost weight since his 03
oh big
days.
Time
yeah
for sure.
Yeah, and he's throwing really hard, looking good, getting a lot of attention out there from major league organizations, and it sounds like he'd like to end up with the Dodgers, so that'd be great if he does.
Sounds like he's pretty set on being a Los Angeles Dodger.
Yeah, he's working out with them, got a good rapport with Alex Anthopoulos, now with the Dodgers, and a fellow Montrealer, of course, so it'd be a really cool story to see if Eric Gagne can get out there and maybe make it back to the big leagues.
I feel like it's worth mentioning for our audience in particular that I read from you today that Toronto Blue Jays are not interested, or at least not talking to him, you know, not bidding for his services at the time.
Yeah, exactly. And Ross Atkins put it very politely, but he said essentially they're happy with the guys they have. And I think Gagne, too, is happy to pursue an opportunity with the Dodgers if that does end up working out. So hopefully we'll see him in the NL.
Hey, best of luck to him. You know, he's a great guy. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Montreal podcast. Considering what it took to pull it off, I really do hope you enjoyed it.
You know what? I was reading some of the reviews on iTunes recently, and it seems like people are enjoying At the Letters. Some really nice reviews out there. So keep those coming.
Thank you for all your reviews. Very much appreciate them. Please keep leaving them. Please keep rating and subscribing, telling your friends. I want to, you know, Ben's on Twitter, @BNicholsonSmith. Almost feel like I don't need to shout him out because he didn't do anything, but Sam McKee is our producer, @SamAMcKee on Twitter. Also, a very, very big shout out to Vic and Palladian, who helped us back in Toronto with this and with putting this podcast together. Couldn't have done it without him. Thank you so much for your time. And my name is Arden Zwelling. We're going to be back on Wednesday, and the Blue Jays will have played a real live professional baseball game that matters. The Blue Jays will be 1-0 or 0-1 at that point.
And
no
people,
ties in the regular season.
Regardless of the outcome of that first game, there's going to be a lot of emotion. So remember, if they win, it doesn't mean that they're going to go 162-0. If they lose and Estrada's horrible, it's fine. Either way.
Who's Baltimore throwing? Is Bundy?
I honestly don't know. I
can look it up really quick.
Gausman.
Gausman would make sense.
I would guess Gausman.
I could look it up really quick if you want to just stall for a second.
I mean, Chris Tillman obviously would have been the guy.
Right.
He's recovering from injury, expected back sometime in May, and that leaves the Orioles with a
It is Gausman. Bundy's in the second game.
There we go.
So it's going to be Estrada v. Gausman, Hap v. Bundy.
And you know what? For the Jays, they face the Orioles only two big league caliber starters.
Yeah, yeah. That's what's going to happen when you start in the season. You get to line things up the way you want.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like the Blue Jays, they've definitely had success against Gausman at times in his career. I feel like they've had success against Bundy. No, Blue Jays just good hitters, man. Like,
yeah.
They're just a good hitting team. So we'll be back on Wednesday to talk about the opener and anything else that may have transpired. And we'll obviously know who is on and off the roster by that point. We'll have plenty to talk about. But thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Really hope you enjoyed this. For Ben, for Vicken, for Sam, for myself, Arden, this has been At The Letter.